Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
More than 75,000 Arizona children, one in four, have parents who need childcare but can't access it.
The single most important task that we will work on over the coming 2 years that will produce the greatest positive benefit for the people of Arizona possible is our efforts to fire Katie Hobbs, Chris Mays, and Adrian Fontes in the 2026 election.
I committed to making sure Arizona could be a state, just like so many other states, who has election results night of, instead of being the state who delivered their electoral results last.
70% of voters are confident in our election results. So this nonsense about so many people wanting the election results right away and therefore we have to jeopardize voter access is just ridiculous.
Does it need to be to the ballot by May? Maybe, maybe not. And I think what's most important is that we have a good deal that supports public education.
The state legislature is requiring that the governor and the attorney general obey federal law when it comes to immigration.
It's clear to me that you're not being honest with us or the American people because you know the truth would disqualify you from getting the job.
And joining me to talk about Governor Hobbs' State of the State speech, a proposal to make Arizona elections more like Florida's and more, our former state lawmaker, Regina Kamb. Regina, good morning.
Good morning.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good morning to
you. Good morning. Great to be here.
Sam, let me start with you. Just general reaction to Governor's State of the State speech. I mean, everybody stayed and faced her this time, so yeah. I guess that's an improvement over past years, right?
A great starting point, absolutely. And I was absolutely pleased. I thought that her poise, her obvious preparation, really, really great writing, frankly. The delivery was wonderful. I also, because of the way that this first week of the legislature goes, I was lucky enough to see it another couple times at the local kind of regional chambers that hosted her give the speech again. So I really, really appreciated the narrative that it cast for the remaining time in her first term and really set up the stage for what really is an in-cycle moment for the political time we're in.
Regina, what do you make of it?
I agree. The speech was well written. I think that oftentimes when they give a speech, I would like to see it come from the heart. When they read a speech, it's difficult. And that's the only thing I would say about as far as the presentation goes. I feel like that a lot of times that you get more accomplished if you just speak from your heart. There was a lot of things in there that have changed over the last few years, like border and her need to now be a border czar when, you know, she wasn't before. What I do like about it was there was a lot of conversation about water. I feel like Governor Hobbs hasn't got a lot accomplished in the last few years. And if water is something that she could get accomplished in the next few years, that would be a huge accomplishment.
It's interesting you mentioned about some of the topics and maybe the tone shifting a little bit, because there's been a lot of talk, obviously, with Republicans at both the state and the national level having more control than they did, or at least on the state level, having bigger majorities in the legislature, that, you know, the governor might have to. For example, there's a lot of talk when she said that the Lake and Riley Act on the federal level she was supportive of. Did it surprise you at all, some of the stuff that she talked about that maybe, I mean, she still talked about ESAs and how she wants to try to, you know, rein those in a little bit or shrink the program a little bit. Was this maybe as much of a Democratic speech, I guess, as she's given in the past?
No, it wasn't. It was more of an independent speech. And I think this is coming up 2 years before an election cycle, and that usually happens. All of a sudden you go from very Republican to independent, very Democrat to independent, and I expected what I heard.
And Sam, there's a lot of talk about like the speech maybe being sort of the kickoff of the governor's 2026 reelection campaign.
I mean, I think that's definitely a reality because that's the moment that we're in. But I think what I heard more is a speech for Arizonans, right? And I think that what we saw in this election that we just finished was really a moment to reflect and respond. And I thought that what Governor Hobbs did with this speech was really be responsive to the moment and the message that Arizona voters provided, because all of our attention is on what happened just a few short 60, 75 days ago, right, and at the election. But I think folks forget that 2 years ago, Governor Hobbs won to be the duly elected governor of Arizona, and she has the right to speak and cast a vision for the Arizona that she sees. And I thought the Arizona dream narrative in the speech was my favorite thread throughout the whole thing.
So, Regina, you've been down. You both have been down at the Capitol this week. I'm curious what kind of vibe you're getting in terms of whether or not this is going to be a year when people get stuff done, whether this is going to be a year when there's a lot of squabbling, either partisan or otherwise. Is it too early to get that kind of sense, or did you have something?
Oh, I think it's less than what it has been in the past. And one of the things that probably indicated it was is that everybody was sitting forward and listening to the speech. So I think we want to get things passed this year. I don't want to have a ballot initiative on every issue,
yeah,
and trying to work with that. And that there's some big issues out there. One that could, like I said, one that could be a bipartisan issue is water. And I think they need to get something done. And the Republicans want to go from ag to urban. Governor Hobbs wants to do rural water. I think there's a common ground somewhere in between the two. And I think you could get both done.
Sam, did you get a vibe from being down there this year?
Yeah.
Or this week?
Well, this week felt like a year. So that's fair. But I think that, one of my takeaways is that we absolutely have a number of freshmen coming into the Capitol this year. But they're relatively, compared to the last few election cycles, we have a smaller number of freshmen. So I think there's a little bit of a sense that this is not just summer camp. Like we're seeing each other again, right? Like there's a little bit more of a gelling, right? That the team is coming together. And yes, we know which jerseys we're all wearing, but but you know, we also know each other's kids' names, and you know, we're going to ask to see how everyone's doing. And I think that congeniality has definitely come through in this first week or so.
Let me ask you one last question on this, Regina, because you've been a state legislator, you've been in the chamber during States of the State speech. How much does that really set the tone for what's to come over the next couple of months?
What that does, and Governor Ducey was a lot like Governor Hobbs is. They're setting their feet in cement. They're saying, this is where I'm going to be standing at. You just got to be able to move one direction or another on that. And so it does kind of set the tone. I always hated it when the governor came up with the budget first. I felt like it
should. The governor will release her budget later today.
She will. And I think that's a travesty. I actually think that sets a wrong tone, because I think that it should come out of the House as it does in the federal government. And so I don't agree with that. And the same thing, as soon as her budget's going to come out, it's going to say, this is what I want. This is where I'm going to go to. There's no secrets then. It's all out there.
Sam, let me ask you about Prop 123, which is the measure that was passed a decade ago to get more money into schools. It was voter approved. It is going to expire this year, and there's been a lot of talk about efforts to renew it. My colleague Wayne Shutsky this week reported that it doesn't seem like there's necessarily a whole lot of hurry at the Capitol to do this, to get it on a special election ballot this spring.
Yeah, I think that some of that is because we have cleared the hurdle in terms of convincing the right people that this is important to do. So that box is checked. There's less of a sense of urgency because we all know and understand the importance of getting this done. And I think you heard in the clips right before we came on, Leader Sundaration speaking about the fact that we don't want to just shove something to the ballot without thinking through every little detail, right? This was a deeply, deeply complex issue that we're talking about, you know, taking money from the state land trust and maybe adjusting a percentage that has to, you know, run against actuarial tables. And there's a whole bunch of different trustees. It's not just the K-12 system, right? We have, you know, state land, federal land that we have to work through, and that isn't even talking about yet the deeply complex education policy questions that are going to be at the table. Do we give this money to districts with no strings attached, or do we give some programmatic directions? Should go to teachers, or this should go to support, you know, a classroom site fund or things like that? So all of those questions I know are being discussed at length right now. I think that there was some sense of urgency that may have been, I don't say a false sense of urgency, but there was some misunderstanding about what needed to happen procedurally to get the question to the ballot at the right time and in the right way. My understanding is that all that has been settled. So behind the scenes, all of those questions are being answered, and I see that you're going to see a grand bargain come through the legislature, referred to the ballot, and it'll be mailed to people for those that are on Pebble, or will be able to vote at the polls likely sometime this fall.
At the same time, though, Regina, it seemed like last year there was also agreement that something had to be done. I mean, the governor had a plan. There are a couple different plans in the Republican-controlled legislature, but the proverbial devil was in the proverbial details. I mean, is that still the case?
It's still the case. I think that when you talk to the Republicans, they want all of it to go to teacher pay. When you talk to Governor Hobbs, she wants it to go to district additional assistance so that it goes to wherever is needed within the district.
Yeah.
So I think that they're going to have to come up with the policy that's good. The amount needs to be, you know, that needs to be negotiated.
What percentage?
Are we keeping the same percentage? You know, Treasurer Yee wants to drop it. Mm-hmm. And Governor Hobb wants to raise it so that there's more money there. You've got to protect the corpus, but we've proven that we could do that at the level that it's at right now. I don't know if you raise it, if you're going to protect the corpus of the fund. So I think that's going to be a big part of it too.
Sam, do you think that with all these sort of discrepancies in the details, are you still optimistic that something will get done?
I'm highly optimistic. I think just to circle back on what I was saying earlier, I think that there is no question at the Capitol that this needs to happen. And that's a really great place to start a discussion, right? If we have an agreement that we need to answer this question, then we can get straight to how we're going to answer that question. And that's where the discussion is right now.
Regina, let me start with you on Senate Bill 1011. Who knows what all the numbers are? I'm not expecting you to know it. But this is the bill that would essentially make some changes to Arizona's election system. It's trying to make it a little bit more like Florida's. The big takeaway here seems to be that early ballot drop-off is cut off at 7 p.m. on the Friday before Election Day, as opposed to giving voters the opportunity to drop their ballots off on Election Day, which, of course, causes some delays in counting the so-called late earlies. This seems to be something that a lot of Republicans from Tom Galvin and Stephen Richer on down are in favor of. Democrats still not. Is this something that you think would improve the situation in Arizona?
Absolutely. I think there's a few other things that could be done, but this is definitely the biggest reason that we're behind. It was an embarrassment this last year that we were so far behind in counting our ballots comparison to the rest of the nation, us in Nevada. And I feel like that this is a good start to go that direction. There's efficiencies all over, but this is probably the biggest reason that we're behind on the rest of the nation.
Sam, this is something that maybe seems like Governor Hobbs would not support. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I've seen in some public statements that she's offered that there is a lot of room that she would like to offer in terms of room to discuss some of those efficiencies that are there in the system. But I think this specific idea maybe has some challenges that need to be further addressed. I mean, I think that I'll go back to one of your questions. You said, is there room for improvement? I'm not sure that what is being fixed in this bill was actually broken. And I know I'll differ with Regina a little bit on that, in the sense that, you know, for those of us with longer memories in the election cycles of Arizona past, it's always been like this. What is new is that Arizona is a little bit more of a competitive state. So, you know, we need to be there. And what's ironic now is that Florida is much less of a swing state. So, like, those results were pretty much signed, sealed, and delivered by all the pundits and whatnot. So you didn't need to really wait for those elections. But we do a very good and responsible job of counting the ballots and providing voter access. And I think that is the thread that Governor Hobbs and legislative Democrats are going to be carrying through is, does this change access to the ability to cast your vote? And that's the singular threat.
And I think that it doesn't change your access to vote. You're dropping it off 3 days sooner. We've changed primary dates. We've done those kind of and we've all adjusted to it. So you adjust to saying, I'm not going to do it 3 days later. I'm going to do it by Friday. So I don't think it disenfranchises anybody.
Is there sort of a compromise to be had here in terms of a way is, or maybe is there a way, and maybe this is too technical for this conversation, but like, is there a way to have voters have the ability to continue to drop their ballots off up to Election Day, but still not have to wait, you know, a week or more after Election Day to verify the signature and count the ballot and process and all that? Like, does it have to be one or the other here?
I think it does. I think it does. It has to be one or the other, because you have to be able to verify those ballot signatures. And if you can't do it ahead of time, now you're doing it during the election cycle when you're counting all the other voters.
And I think that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think there is some room to do both of those. And I had to throw in a gum.
Sugar-free gum.
Sugar-free. Yeah. I'm sitting next to a dentist. I gotta be good about that.
Non-fluoridated.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, having this discussion, and, you know, we were kind of chatting a little bit earlier about this, that, you know, this is where conversations should start, right? We're not talking about Sharpies. We're not talking about bamboo in the ballots. There's, you know, not any 2,000 mules type of a conversation. This is very, very healthy. And I was lucky enough to be in the room for the hearing on that bill. And I even thought that the tone and the tenor of the overall conversation, folks disagreed coming from a place of, you know, positive assumptions of intent, right? I think even Senator Ortiz's lines of questioning really opened up to some of those lines that you were talking about. Is there a way to maybe provide a path that if you drop off your ballot through on Election Day, it can be counted maybe right there or shortly after, so we're not waiting weeks after?
Is that a function, Sam, do you think, of the results of the 2024 election?
I don't think that the recency and our experience there hurt at all. We continue to have competitive elections that require that, like, intrigue. But I also think that democracy is worth waiting for. And I think that we're going to hear that over and over again. And I didn't come up with that line, but it's a good one. So I use it as often as I can.
We'll give you credit for it. Regina, let me ask you about something going on in D.C. A lot of President-elect Trump's cabinet appointees or nominees are having their confirmation hearings. And one of the most widely watched one was for Secretary of Defense nominee Pete Hegseth. Of course, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly on the Senate Armed Services Committee. He and his line of questioning, and I will admit to not watching the entire hearing, but seeing bits and pieces of it, he had some very specific questions about very specific incidents. And Mr. Hegseth's answers were generally two words, anonymous smears. I'm wondering, like, if you are Mark Kelly and you have been on that dais questioning people, not specifically in that setting, but questioning people, what is that like when you kind of know that you're not actually going to get an answer to the question that you're asking?
It's difficult if you're not going to get the answer, but also, why are they asking some of the questions that they were asking? Some of them go back, 30, 40 years. If you go back to any of our histories of any person, we've changed, we've evolved. And the person that you are is the person that you are now. So I think the line of questioning sometimes is a little difficult. And I don't think Mark Kelly expected an answer. And so he just wanted to put it out there.
What did you make of especially how Senator Kelly handled that situation?
I think that overall, this is a spectacle, right? This is the period of time. So I think that all aspects of a hearing are going to have elements of, you know, what has that shock value. I do think that Senator Kelly asked a series of very important questions. He understands the military, so did that entire panel, right? And Mr. Hegseth wants to be the secretary of the world's largest military apparatus, and I think that there are some very important questions that need to be answered. So I think that there was an element of that spectacle piece, but I do think that these are important questions of the people who we are going to look to for leadership of our most important institutions.
All right. Last topic I want to get to. Attorney General Chris Mays this week asked now former special counsel Jack Smith for his files and his report in the so-called fake electors case. There's a lot of sort of moving parts in this, and there are questions about whether Jack Smith is going to be prosecuted, for example, by the next administration. I'm curious, Regina, like, how important do you think it is to continue this case? How important do you think it is for Attorney General Mays to get this file and to be able to continue her investigation in her case?
And I questioned that already as soon as I heard about that. I think this is move on. Let's move on. We've got past that point. I don't think that – I mean, I think Attorney General Mays is trying to politic. You know, again, she's going to be running for governor or attorney general again. I think she said recently that she's going to be running for attorney
re-election,
general, re-election for attorney general. But this is politicking. And get past it. Go on to something that you really need to be working on.
Sam, do you agree?
I think that it was definitely the right move, right? Someone was leaving office, did an amazing set of work. Amazing is the wrong word, but an in-depth amount of work to set up that investigation and potential action in litigation. So I think Attorney General Mays asking for that was just the right move. I think there's always an element of politics, but I think that in the case of these fake electors, there were some serious allegations that need to be answered in a serious way. And to not lose all of the work that Jack Smith did, I think is an important move.
Stipulating that none of the three of us in this room are attorneys, I don't think any of us are attorneys.
No.
I certainly am not. Do you guys think she's going to get these files?
I don't know. I don't think so. But you never know, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not an attorney. I'm a dentist.
I can't answer that with any level of authority, but it would be interesting to see what happens when she does and the new administration comes in. Are they going to ask for them back?
Yeah.
Right. I think that we're going to see this kind of,
back and forth.
Yeah. It's
that should go away. You know, that's like I said, we need to focus on things of importance. And this is not one of those.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. Regina Cobb, Sam Richard, thank you so much for the conversation. Really nice to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.